Hey, it's the JRR, you Tolkien to me podcast. I don't see anyone else here but Jude Fox. And tonight we are very excited to be Tolkien about the new Disney Plus series, Willow. Jude, you got something to say about that?
I certainly do. In fact, I've been interpreting prophecies and hiding in plain sight all week long, getting ready for tonight. And the new series, Willow, is based on the 1988 film starring Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer, and Joanne Worley, and was directed by Ron Howard, produced by George Lucas, and takes place in a medieval-style fantasy world, clearly not our own Earth, but I will be touching on that later, where we follow a Nelwyn, which is their version of halflings, by the name of Willow Offgood, played by Davis, whose children find a baby floating down the river, Baby Moses style, rescue it, only to have their High Alduin tell them to bring it to their own people. The High Alduin, by the way, is sort of a leader, sorcerer, and soothsayer for their people. And upon his quest, Willow sets out to rescue this child and meets the roguish swordsman, Mad Mardigan, played by Val Kilmer, a sorceress by the name of Raziel, two pixie-like creatures called Brownies, and Sorsha, played by Wally. Yeah, I knew that. Anyway,
Can I mention something?
You absolutely may.
So, we got a Moses kind of tale here. And we have an ancient prophecy. One day an ancient evil is going to rise again. And this is according to Willow. And the ancient evil is going to kill Allura, the new empress.
Yes.
And bring a new era of darkness.
This is once we get to the show. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Within the movie itself, once these characters come together, they essentially defeat the evil queen. Sorsha and Mad Mardigan go off in romantic coupling of some sorts. And Willow goes back to his home. And then we pick up, however many years later, 30 years later, as the series starts. And that's when we understand that there is more of this prophecy, which still has yet to be fulfilled, thanks to the visions that Willow is now having.
Okay. Right. And so to reiterate that, one day an ancient evil is going to rise again and kill Allura, the new empress, and bring a new era of darkness. So they decide to hide Allura, and nobody knows her true identity. Even Allura herself doesn't know that she is Allura. Possibly Mad Mardigan and Sorsha and Willow are the only three who know who Allura is. And this brings us in to the first scene of the show, proper.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we open up on two female masked opponents having a sword fight on a stony stairs on a hill. So they're outside in this sort of like stared kind of arena-ish type of thing.
Yeah.
And these are Kit and Jade.
Yes.
And Kit, she kind of gets the best of Jade. She knocks Jade off balance, and she wins the bout.
She does.
And you know why?
Why is this?
It's about adapting to your terrain.
Ah.
For Kit. It's not about the moves. It's about how you do the moves, where you do the moves, whenever you do them.
And speaking of moves, there's obvious romantic tension between the two ladies, even in this scene.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that There's going to be more of that. But they are clearly some old friends, Jude. And they have plans for adventure.
Neither of them that old, though.
No, they've been friends since childhood.
Yes.
They are not. They are young people.
Young ladies.
Late teens, early 20s, max.
Yep.
But anyway, Kit, she is the princess. And she is the daughter of Mad Mardigan and Sorsha. And she is now summoned because she is going to meet the royal party from Galadorm because she's going to marry the prince, Graydon Haster.
And I think this is an early but a good time to bring up the fact that we already see a disparity of accents within this show, which is a little bit odd. What do you think about that, Rob?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it because it is odd. It's weird to have a person speaking American English and British English, and they're like in the same family and they're from the same kingdom, and it's a little strange. But
a little bit
for the fact that this is, I'm going to actually categorize this as comedy fantasy. In the way that only like Ron Howard would really do it. And it helps with the flow, and the modern American English kind of helps with certain comic delivery, as does Warwick's realism in the way he approaches
and very,
the dialogue.
And so, very British.
So, yeah, and very, very British. So I'm enjoying it despite the oddness of it. You know, it's both good and bad.
I do have a theory that I'm sure I'll bring up later, which may help to explain this.
Okay. So anyway, her twin brother now meanwhile, he is hunting in the Western Wood, Jude. And that means he's fucking around with a maiden.
Hey now.
He likes the maidens. And now we cut to Prince Eric. You know, A-R-A-I-R-K. Eric.
Yes, it's almost George Martin-esque spelling. Mm. Not quite, but it seems a little bit influenced, perhaps.
Anyway, his name is Eric. And he's messing around with a maiden in the woods. Not in the woods, in the plains, it looks like. Grassy field. Her name is Dove. So Eric and Dove is what he calls her, anyway.
Yeah.
They are interrupted by Case, Sir Case, I believe. And he is an elderly, sort of elderly knight. He is the queen's servant.
He's a Barristan Selmy type.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not as badass as that, though. We're going to see.
Not
anyway,
quite.
He tells Eric he's better clean up his shit and get ready because he's got to look presentable for the royal guest, King Haster.
Oh, yeah.
And a great host are there. Visiting the kingdom, there's an engagement happening, so get your shit together, son.
And
don't look like you've been messing around in a field with a maiden from the kitchen.
No. But this King Haster, and I'll mention more about him as we see more of him, for anyone that's familiar with the name, it seems to come from a character known as the Yellow King from the famous Robert W. Chambers book, The King in Yellow, which was then later picked up by H.P. Lovecraft and other authors. And there seems to be some indication, perhaps I'm reading a bit into it, but some indication that this name may have significance down the road, so we'll see how that plays out. And again, I'll mention it more when the time comes.
Okay, that's interesting. Put that in your pocket. Jude's laying down a little bit of knowledge. So anyway, Kit and Jade, they're riding back to the city. And Kit wants Jade to go to the royal dinner, the ball, whatever it is, with her, and neither of them are into this sort of thing at all. They kind of detest it. They're a little bit more emo than that, I think. Anyway, so Kit in the castle, she sees her brother Eric, her twin,
yep,
They don't really look like twins.
No.
They're paternal twins.
I didn't even pick up that they were supposed to be twins, in fact, to be honest with you.
Is it called fraternal twins when they don't look alike? I don't know. I just said something before. I think I was wrong.
Yeah, no.
Fraternal?
One is maternal. The other would be, right?
No. I don't know. So anyway, we're dumb here. We don't know things very well. I think it might be fraternal, like the brothers. I don't know.
Well, if that was the case, the other would be...
Yeah. It doesn't.
Saturnal?
I don't know. No. I don't know. It's not a direct
maternal,
thing.
So it would be fraternal.
The kitchen maid.
Anyway.
He's kissing the kitchen maid.
Yeah.
Dove, goodbye. And Kit sees this. And she talks to him about being a man whore.
She also gives him a bit of a look that I kind of interpreted almost as a sense of jealousy, you know, the fact that he gets to have public displays of affection and she seems not to be able to do this.
Right. Clearly there's a double standard that she does not like. She brings that up a lot.
Yeah.
And he tells her that this time, though, it's actually different. And I think he's serious about that. He really, really likes and is committed to this kitchen maid he calls Dove.
Dove. Like the soap.
Yeah, like the soap. Anyway, so then they are approached by Queen Sorsha.
And incidentally, there's a surprising amount also of innuendo that seems to be happening for a Disney show.
There's always a surprising amount of innuendo to you.
Well, you know, there's a bit as they're going through the castle and Kit mentions Dove's buttered muffins and Eric says how he loves her muffins. And it's, once again, it's like a very obvious innuendo. It's not something I feel I'm reading into much here.
Everyone loves her muffins, Jude.
Apparently.
Children love it.
Whoa.
The elderly.
Let's back it up here a little bit.
Because they're bred.
Let's keep it PG.
Based products.
Let's keep it PG.
Okay. Anyway, so Queen Sorsha's there. And she's kind of, reprimandy. And she's laid out a gown for Kit. And Kit really wants her to stop treating her like a child.
Yeah.
And Sorsha wants her to be responsible and save the goddamn kingdom with your marriage.
Yeah, Sorsha also mentions how her men found her playing on top of the rocks. And that she doesn't like it because it's dangerous. And once again, and Kit is offended by this, but once again, there seems to be a lot of double entendre there. With the idea that it's dangerous for her to be doing what she's doing with this other girl and from a medieval type of society that they have to keep that in check. And once again, this seems to be a theme that's running throughout.
Well, but if she was playing with her, if she was a male,
right,
sword fighting with her male friend, I think it would have been fine. It would have been a prince doing his princely duty of learning the arts of war.
Yeah, I mean, it probably depends on how he's sword fighting, but yeah.
Not that way. But more importantly, anyway, listen, Sorsha is about to hear the whisperings, okay? We saw the whisperings in the last show that we covered, Isildur. And now we're getting whisperings here. And the whisperings are warning about the Gaels.
The whisperings are warnings from Willow.
They're warning. I don't think the voice is Willow.
No, it definitely is because if you watch it with the subtitles, it said that it was Willow.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even think that.
Yeah, and then she later says how she knew it because of Willow.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. So Willow is the whispering voice.
Willow is the whispering words.
Huh. So he's not that bad of a sorcerer. We're going to find out. Maybe.
Yeah. Well.
What are the gales, Jude? It's going to be windy?
Oh, I was hoping for Dorothy, but we're not getting Dorothy Gale. The gales are an interesting mix of kind of demonic people, creatures.
I like the Gaels. Let's talk to that. Let's talk about that when that comes around. Anyway, so now we cut to Ballantine. He is the commander.
Yeah. Real quick, something I almost missed that I wanted to point out was when Sorsha was speaking to Kit, you see their main hall in the castle. And there's a very interesting production design aspect of a giant 8-pointed star window, which looks surprisingly like the window and the 7-pointed star in House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. And it's just very interesting production design. I don't know how intentional it is, or if they're kind of challenging them back and forth, because, you know, a lot of filmmakers will do that kind of thing. But it's very close to that design, and it's just something that I felt was really worth pointing out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, we cut to Ballantine, and he's the commander, and he and Jade are talking, and he's kind of busting her balls a little bit about being there at the royal party. Because he knows it's not that her kind of thing. And anyway, so they're talking about Jade going off to train to be a knight, and that she feels like Kit's gonna feel abandoned by that happening.
And she probably will. And Ballantine, by the way, played by Ralph Ennison, I believe his name is, reminds me a lot of Charles Dance, who played Tywin Lannister on Game of Thrones, going back to Game of Thrones again. And since he's a bit younger and more of a hands-on warrior, from going forth, I'm just going to call him TIE Fighter. You know, like Tywin Fighter.
I get it.
Yeah, that's so anyway.
Oh, what enjoyable humor you have.
Wah, wah.
So, anyway... We now go to Graydon Haster, and let me tell you something about this guy. He's the kid from the Grand Budapest Hotel by Wes Anderson, one of my favorite movies, and
as well as all the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where I know him from. So she's looking at him, and she's bitching about having to marry him, and she feels like he's some boring ass loser. I feel like. Anyway, so then we cut to the table with the queen, with Sorsha and King Haster. And they're talking about, she's like worried about trouble in the west and trouble in the north and things possibly getting through the cosmic barrier of goodness. And King Haster, he's not really hearing it. He's like, nothing can get through that and whatever. But clearly the point is that the queen is looking at this marriage as a political alliance in order to protect the kingdom by uniting Tyr Aslin and Galadorn, side-by-side kingdoms.
And going back a little bit into the literature reference that I spoke about earlier with Haster, the color choices and the wardrobe strike me as very interesting, and perhaps I'm reading into it a bit, but you actually have Sorsha dressed in yellow, which is Haster's signature color from the literature, and King Haster is dressed in green, but with gold accents or yellow accents, including an epitaph on his shoulder, which then leads into some ropes, decorative ropes that adorn his breast and look very much like the yellow sign, which is described by Robert Chambers and H.P. Lovecraft in the literature. And it looks like it's meant to represent an inverted torch. And we'll see again if this plays out, but it seems to be a very intentional production design, and I'm very curious if it's going to lead somewhere.
So, I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, I mean, you're really going down rabbit holes with some of these things already, Jude. It's episode one, buddy.
Well, you know, if you haven't read the...
do you want to talk about pretty royal countesses, or do you want to talk about that arcana? Let's talk about pretty royal countesses who are flirting with Eric.
Who is doing his best Val Kilmer impersonation here.
And he, you know what they heard? He's a great swordsman, Jude.
I'll bet.
Blah, 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 blah.
But he's not the best in the kingdom. He's second best at most.
Right.
According to him. He's modest.
He's funny.
Yeah, and he's modest. Like, he's, you know, not trying to be arrogant or anything.
So anyway, Dove, she's jealously watching this as she's serving. I think she was serving some, like, pigs in a blanket or something?
Probably.
So, Sorsha, she's going to make the big speech now about uniting the two kingdoms and wishing the newlyweds a harmonious future. And that hopefully the bride and groom will defend the realm until Elora Dannon, the true empress, returns. So they're kind of stewards to this kingdom.
Yeah, and by the way, when she talks about her mother, she never mentions her... as her mother or any relationship, she just mentions her by name as if to disassociate.
Yep. Right. And then, but then after she makes, she hears the voice again, I guess it's Willow, warning about the gales and the lengthening shadow. And only by her light can we find our way into the darkness. Oh, only find our way in the darkness. That's very different. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go into the darkness. You want to find your way in the darkness.
Guess it depends what the darkness is.
Right. So Sorsha goes down into the cells after that, and she's going to talk to a guy named Borman.
Yep.
And he seems to be more of a confidant than a prisoner.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a weird a little bit of a weird talk without... context, but I imagine we will get more of it later on.
Right.
You know, he's advising her about loveless marriage and how he understands what she did, and
she married for
definitely
love.
More of a connection with
she
him.
She definitely didn't marry Mad Mardigan for political reasons, and he knows that. And
we'll find out a little bit of
it. And she confesses that she really doesn't like setting up this arranged marriage, but she needs to do it to protect the kingdom.
Doing their duty.
And he's like, yeah, well, I know you married for love. Who would marry that psycho if they didn't love him? Kinda. So anyway, we're back at the royal party at the ball, and Jade tells Kit she's been accepted to the Shining Legion. And she's going to be the first woman to be a knight.
Yes, and right here, their relationship is becoming even more obvious if you didn't already pick up on it.
Yeah, well, totally. That's the whole gist of the thing. We're going to find out. She's going to Galadorn to train, and she's leaving right after the wedding, which is tomorrow, mind you. And so this really pisses off Kit, who then takes it out on poor Graydon, her betrothed, and she, like, really makes a scene, and she challenges him to a contest of knife throwing, and she puts an apple on her brother's head, and she starts telling a story about a rebellious princess who fought for the right to make her own choices in life.
Come on, she doesn't put an apple, it's like a pumpkin or something, or some kind of squash. I mean, she wasn't going to risk his life.
Jeez. Well, anyway, it was a little extreme.
A little bit.
There was some drama going on.
A little
there.
Bit. He wasn't real comfortable with the idea of having
things escalated quickly.
A little too quickly.
So she's about to throw the knife, and then she's stopped by Sorsha, who grabs her hand.
Mommy said no.
No, and then she yells at her in private for being a petulant child. And Eric, to his credit, he did come back there to talk to them, and he tries to smooth things over, and he seems to be a pretty reasonable dude in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he is. Sorsha, by the way, tells Kit, she says, you know, you showed everyone in the room who you really are. which, not to harp on it, but once again, seems to be subtext for what else is going on within there.
Right. So anyway, Sorsha kind of just shuts them both up. She dismisses them. You're getting married. That's it. And then Kit kind of reveals in this exchange that she has some serious daddy issues with Mad Mardigan, and she feels that Eric might follow in his footsteps and abandon everyone. And he is sincerely promises that he will never do that, and he will never abandon her or the kingdom. Anyway, and
not
so,
by his own will, at least.
No, and well, he didn't do that. Anyway, Kit leaves, and Dove arrives. And she's pissed off because of Eric's, you know, flirting around with the countesses. And she doesn't think, she's coming to the realization that a kitchen maid, she has no real shot. But, no, he actually does want to commit to her. And we're going to see that play out. So now we cut to a kid. Kid Rock. No, uh-oh. We cut to Kit.
I don't want to cut to him.
Kit is waking up Jade in the middle of the night.
In her bedroom. On her bed.
And, yeah, she's kissing her and stuff.
Yeah,
she's
she is.
Basically saying goodbye, though. She's running away beyond the barrier.
Yeah.
And they're clearly an intimate couple. We see this, obviously. And she tells Jade that, Jade, you're going to make a great night.
Yeah.
Someday, but I gotta go. I'm going beyond the barrier.
Hmm. The
to
fact
seek adventure.
That, the fact that this scene takes away any doubt or innuendo, I feel, is once again kind of a brave choice. Seeing it's on Disney Plus and seeing the production, you know, I thought it was an interesting way for them to go. I was kind of expecting them to play it out and not really say anything and. But no, they went there, and good for them.
Yeah. I, you know, it's part of the story.
Yep.
So anyway, we cut to Eric, and he is proposing to Dove. And there's innocent love music in the background, piano and strings. And anyway, so, you know, we have this nice moment where Eric is, he is not a man whore. He is very much in love with his Dove gal. But guess what's going to happen now? We're going to get a little bit of excitement because here are the gals.
Yeah,
not the gals.
No.
Well, not the gals. Could have been the golden gals.
One or two of them might be female. It's a little hard to tell.
You wonder where the golden gals are today. Golden girls.
They are all dead.
They're the gals. The Gales. Yes. Anyway, so they are, what are they? Sorcerers, evil warriors, sorcerer things. The Doom, the Scourge, the Lich.
Each one a bit
and
different.
And Scorpia?
Each one a bit different and a bit meaner than the next.
So we'll talk about what they are exactly in a second, but we get an all-out attack from these four with the addition of boar-like death dogs, and they're similar, like an upgrade from the movie.
Yeah, they're also called Nokmar hounds. They're essentially small wargs.
You want to get a small warg, you got to go to Nokmar.
Yeah. You got to go where the getting's good.
Go where the small wargs are. They're called death dogs, too. Anyway, the assault happens. One of them, the sorcerer one, the Lich, I think.
Yep.
He's the one who makes the fog. And I really like the details of the character design here with these guys. From the dogs, I like the dogs look cool. The Gales themselves, all.
They're well designed.
All the heroes are called to arms, the basic characters in the show. And they even let the badass fetch my cleaver, Borman, out of his cell.
Yes, because
to join the fight.
Apparently, Borman is such a badass that he's brought out of these dark cells by the queen herself to defend the castle as soon as someone attacks. So that's saying something about him.
This is not just any ordinary attack.
Yeah, it's saying something about him. And, you know, it's also saying just how few people they seemed to have in the castle, which was
and Borman
a little bit
he
of
is,
a thing.
He
for
looks
me.
Like he's about 6'4", 6'5".
No, again, he's definitely
a big man.
He definitely looks like he can take care of himself and proves that he can. But the fact that, you know, for a castle of this type,
he's got a cleaver.
Yes, he does.
Anyway,
and he will cleave them.
I know what you're gonna say. Yep. Let's say that a little later.
Oh, okay.
So let's talk about these unique villains we got going on here. We got like a leper-like, facially deformed, hunched, spasmodic sorcerer who's blind and can teleport.
Don't be judgmental.
I'm not. I wish I was that.
Oh, well, that kind of makes sense.
That's the Lich. I don't know what the other ones are. We got a changeling. I guess she's Scorpia. She can take the form of a giant bird of prey, but she also has a weird scorpion-like quality to her normal being. She kind of does that weird, like, the ring kind of walk, too. That was bizarre.
It is kind of sexy.
We got a hulking brute in a spiked head cage. I don't know which one he is. Which one do you think he is?
I'm guessing the Scourge.
The Scourge?
Because, you know, I mean, he just looks like he can wreck shop.
Yeah.
And he looks kind of like a character out of Resident Evil or Silent Hill or something.
Is that guy that Deadpool has to fight in Deadpool 2?
You're talking about the Juggernaut?
Yeah, Juggernaut. not quite that big.
Not quite Juggernaut, no.
Yeah. And then we got the double whip wielding demon-like cloaked figure with a metal thing over his eyes. What is that? It was cool looking.
It looks cool. I would not want to be him or her.
I don't know. He's got two whips.
I mean, two whips.
And he knows how to use them.
Hey, now.
He was a cool dude.
I mean,
I don't think they're really
cool.
You
can make a living like that.
I'm just going to say this. Cool villain. Cool villains.
Indeed.
I like the fights. The fact we're going to talk about later, there should have been 200 at least soldiers right in there. But there weren't. Anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, they are in a courtyard of a castle.
Of a castle.
And the whole idea of a courtyard of a castle like that is that people up on the walls can just fire down and create a death pit.
Of course.
In there. And nobody's up on the walls. You know, there's like, what, half a dozen people in the courtyard?
We watch Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah, there's like half a dozen people in the courtyard, I think.
I don't know.
The idea of medieval accuracy, not that this is a real world.
Not what this show's going for, apparently.
Yeah, it's definitely not going for that, but we'll move on.
You know who does get messed up is Ballantine. He's the commander, and he is stabbed by the sorcerer, by the Lich.
Yeah.
And he is clearly going to be infected with evil from this dude's staff,
He's going to be fine. I don't know what you're talking about.
The guy was saying some black speech.
It's a scratch.
He was speaking nephrotic.
It was a mere scratch.
He was speaking nephrotic and while he wiggled his shaft in there.
Whoa.
So anyway, some evil stuff got in him. Yeah. And Eric is...
Poor TIE fighter.
But you know what happened? And Eric is taken by the changeling...
Yes, he is.
Scorpia. And obviously that was the purpose of the mission of the Gales
and
their assault.
And Borman really comes into his own saving Jade, who's being held by the throat by the Scourge. At least that's who we think it is.
Oh, he chops off his arm.
And he chops off his arm.
Would you call that coming into his own? I think he's a renowned badass.
Well, I mean, in terms of the show, like, you know, we haven't seen anything of him until now.
We got to see Borman get badass on this shit. But yeah, he chopped off the Scourge's arm.
And I mean, he has a one-liner, but he really missed like a, you know, I just came to give you a hand type of a
something like
line.
That.
But, you know, whatever. It's not the 80s.
I totally thought you were going to put her down. That's what he said. So once they get Eric, they leave. They just take off. They're not fighting anymore. And Prince Graydon... He didn't participate in the fight. He's not much of a fighter.
No, Tony Revolori, who plays him, is great at playing the guy who would just rather not be there. Like, it's kind of the guy he plays a lot.
But he's spirited in his own way.
I like him as an actor. It's just that is often his character. He's like, you know, okay, I guess I got to be here. I'd rather not be.
He's a bit of a male Daria. Anyway, he describes everything to the council, the queen, Queen Sorsha, King Haster, his father, and the whole court right there. He describes
Hoster,
the
Haster. Hoster.
Hoster?
I believe so. Anyway, go on.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, so there's black speech that he calls Nakotic. He knows the language that they were speaking.
Yeah, don't cross franchises.
And he tells about Eric being taken away by the bird-like creature. And Bormann is then, they come in with Bormann as a prisoner. A couple of the knights had captured him. And he tried to escape after the battle. So Bormann is brought in, and the fellowship is about to be formed. So we're talking about, anyway, Kit first says that she wants to go west after her brother. And she's totally surprised when Sorsha's like, yeah, you should go. She's like, no, I mean west. And she's like, yeah, I agree. And she's like, oh, okay. Which is weird, because it looks like it's the first time her mom agreed. Anyway, so then Ballantine, he wants to go, but he can't because he's commander of the Palicade.
The Palicade. That sounds like a medical condition.
No, the Pacalcade.
Pacalcade. That sounds even worse. That sounds like something you need removed.
The Pacalcade.
I had to get my Pacalcade removed. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be into work for 3 days.
Anyway, so he can't go. He's got Pacalcade duty. And and then we got Case. He's going to go, the old knight. And he's going to bring his red shirt with him just in case it gets cold.
Hey, come on.
Just in case.
Come on.
It gets cold. He's going to bring his red shirt, people. So he's going to be the leader of this fellowship, and Jade is going to go.
Yeah.
Also, and Graydon. Graydon is shamed into it by his father.
Who, by the way, whispers into his ear, and I'm very curious what exactly was being said. I think it's another thing that's going to pay off later on. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't notice, but he said he's going to let you're going to let your bride go on a quest without you. That he really was. Yeah. Anyway, and so anyway, Bormann, he's going to go. He's going to have all his crimes forgiven, even whatever he did in the haberdashery. Jude, because he likes the feel of something on his
velvet. He likes velvet on his somewhere. That's all we know.
Even that one? Yep. Okay.
I mean, whatever, that's all it takes.
Whatever he did there, he really wants that pardon.
Yep.
Maybe it was a civil suit. Maybe he caused some damage.
Oh, boy.
I don't think they had DNA testing back then, though.
You know, I kind of feel it wouldn't take,
you know,
DNA
what she mentions?
Testing. I feel he was busted mid whatever he was doing.
Here's a little mystery. Sorsha says is he's going to square a debt with an old friend.
Ooh, who's that? I wonder.
Mad Mardigan?
Could be.
So anyway. So, and also, he's got to go see a sorcerer, and guess
who's
who? Guess who that's going to be? You guess.
Gandalf?
It's going to be Gandalf.
Yay! I mean, he was missing from the last show we covered.
It's going to be Meteor Man.
It's
going to be Willow.
Oh, of course.
So, Sorsha tells Kit about Bav Morda. Her grandmother. She doesn't mention that ever, though. And Willow's prophecy. But she does say that the enemy is in us, in a way.
Well, she says that we have enemies without and within.
Enemies without and within,
and
yes.
That indicates that we're going to find further betrayals, not counting TIE Fighter.
Well, the next scene is Ballantine.
Right. Well, TIE Fighter there is clearly obvious. So I'm feeling that there's going to be perhaps other betrayals later on.
But Ballantine doesn't seem to be affected at this point.
That stuff on his hand with the veins coming up
he's
in black.
He's infected.
Like, clearly
he's
not,
infected, but he's not in affected mode.
It hasn't taken over his mind yet.
Right.
Yeah.
He gives Jade a special sword, and she's very proud of it. And Saoirse is also talking to Jade next, and she trusts her to be like any knight and to take care of her daughter.
Yeah, she's clearly approving of what's going on, at least not in public, at least in private she's
right.
Seems to be approving.
Maybe.
It's just a public image issue is what I'm picking up.
Does she definitely know though?
It seems, with all the innuendo, it seems obvious that she knows what's going on.
I think we're going to find out later she didn't know
that.
We see as they're leaving, the evil is starting to throb. His hand's getting a little throbby with the evil, that Valentine. Yeah, it's got evil. Mom, Dad! Anyway, someone's following the Fellowship, we find out later on. Guess who it is? It's Dove. And she wants
She's
to help.
She's flying along.
She wants to help rescue Eric. Because true love. Marriage! True love. So anyway, has she ever been in a fight?
No.
Kit asks. No, she has not. But she can cook. She is phenomenal at cooking, Jude.
Yes, she is. So we've heard.
That's what she say.
And you know, with all the you know, this back and forth, you know, Jade mentions about how you know, Eric's been in love with quite a few, ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum.
Yeah.
And I kind of, it makes me kind of scratch my head and wonder if perhaps there's not a little bit more that we haven't seen, you know. Once again, perhaps it's my my bias having read so much George R. R. Martin type stuff.
I just kind of picture
Eric, you know, standing over over the keep, out the window, just doing his business that... Once again, maybe I'm reading a little too much into it.
You mean as far as him being a man whore? I think that
I mean, like, you know, like that his debauchery probably is way beyond anything we're ever going to see on screen in this type of show.
Yeah, I mean, I'd assume
you know,
that.
It's just like a little implication of it, like, oh, he's done, oh my God.
Or maybe he's just fooling around. Anyway, we don't know. But anyway, Graydon, So, what's her face? Dove there. Yeah. She is told by Case, the old knight leading the expedition, she's got to go back, but wait until the morning. So they
get a campfire
scene with her. So they're at camp. It's dusk. Graydon, he whips out a flute, and he gets shot down for playing his flute by Kit. She's like, what do you think this is? Your little adventure? You're playing your flute? You're enjoying yourself? This is serious, bro.
Yeah, bring a flute. You should have brought s'mores. What's wrong with you?
Borman tells Kit that she is kind of just really as naive, if not maybe even more so than Graydon. He kind of shoots them both down. And then Jade tells Dove about what the barrier is, because Dove asks about it. And it's a force field forged by Razel and also by Sherlindria, the fairy goddess of the forest.
Light creature sorcerer that we met in the movie.
Maybe a Galadriel-like figure.
It's not the warrior
Galadriel, but like the Lord of the Rings.
The Lady of Light. It's very undefined in the movie.
Let's
exactly
think of her like that
is,
in a way.
I mean, I don't know if it's going to be more defined in the show, but you know, it's just hinted at what she may or may not be in the movie.
She's a Lady of Light.
She's literally a Lady of Light.
She's got the power. Anyway, so it was forged by those two powerful, good sorceresses to protect the realm. But Borman and Case both have a different opinion about why it was forged. It wasn't to protect the realm. It was to protect Elora Dannon, the chosen one.
The only one who matters.
Right. And Kit, man, she really has some Elora Dannon issues, I'll tell you. You know, since her father was more concerned, according to her, about protecting the chosen Elora Dannon than he was about staying with his own children, and she's scarred by that. So she's got the daddy issues, and she's got the Elora Dannon issues.
We'll just call them Danny issues.
Danny issues. Anyway, so now we cut to the next morning, and Dove has flown the cage. She's left. She needs, but you know, she's going to go try to go over the barrier. But in order to go over the barrier by herself, not the way they're going, she has to go over a gorge. And and she's got to climb on this very precarious log. Yeah. Anyway, so the rest, they're on their journey. They go and they cross the bridge leading to the barrier.
Like, in other words, they go the smart way.
Right. But they, before they get there, they come to the armory. And there's no one there. It's been abandoned, but no one would have been, they would never abandon the armory.
That is after they cross the bridge and actually go through the barrier itself. The armory is on the far side of the barrier.
Okay.
Which was a little odd because you have this what do they call it? The gate, which is a great stone arch that can be seen probably for, I don't know, a couple miles away because it's very tall. It's, you know, maybe 4 or 5 stories tall. Like, it's huge. And you have basically this concept of a barrier which surrounds all of the lands with this impenetrable, magical field to keep the land safe. And then you have a giant, beckoning, decorated, unguarded, open passageway, which, you know, you could kind of just walk through and, like, yes, there's this armory guard post, which is abandoned right after it, but, like, God, no, that's a tempting target.
It wasn't, like, supposed to be abandoned. It was supposed to be manned.
Right, but I'm saying it just seems like that would be a tempting target for invaders to, like, converge on.
You can walk out of the barrier. I'm pretty sure you can't go into it.
It's very unclear at this point in the show.
Would it be a barrier then?
Maybe it's a one-way...
it's a one-way ticket.
Yeah, perhaps. That'll make more sense. I'll be happier. I mean,
then it wouldn't be called a barrier. It would just be called a gloopy-glappy thing that you go through.
As long as you can find the opening.
I mean, people would just go there all the time just to go through it.
That'd be fun.
Oh, there's an opening. I don't know.
I like going through openings.
Anyway... So the armory is abandoned, but Kit finds some writing. Looks like it's in blood, maybe on the stone walls.
It appears that way
of the entranceway, and this is where Graydon's big brain comes in handy.
Yes, Prince.
He
Prince
can
Hoster.
Read the runes, and he or whatever they are, and he says, "This is what they say: we stand at the threshold." We peer into the void and bear witness to his glory, the eternal one, the healer of worlds. And as he stirs from his deathless slumber deep below the surface, the harbinger of the worm will come.
Which sounds kind of Lovecraftian / cosmic horror.
They're talking about Halbrand.
You know.
He's the healer of worlds. He wanted to heal the world.
Let's not go there.
All right.
but no, it definitely, again, feels kind of Lovecraftian in the way it's written. And again, the fact that it's Prince Hauster who says it, giving me a strong indications that there is way more to this family than meets the eye.
Okie doke. Okay.
But then what do we get when they read that? We get the shaking of the earth.
Right. Right. And at the same time, Dove
is not finished.
She almost dies because she's falling into the chasm because of the shaking of the earth and miraculously lands in such a way where she can climb back up on the other side, on the side that she was going to.
Well, that being said, we can see from underneath as the log, the tree is falling, we see her jumping to safety. So I feel that the fact that she made it... after we've seen it already, was a little bit of a false fake out. But, I mean, that being said, she's called Dove. She can fly. So, you know, I think there's a little thematic thing going on that they're trying to play with there.
Well, anyway, she goes, she climbs up. She's on the right side now. She walks up to the barrier. She parts the energy barrier with her hands and walks through it.
Oh, does that mean something? No.
Maybe.
No.
And anyway, and the Fellowship, they see her.
The Fellowship.
And they ride up to her on the grassy covered plains. And Case is, he's going to give a big speech now. And he's talking about how they have to keep a vigilant watch at all times in order to survive. And he is, of course, shot by an arrow amid speech.
Yep. And that's, you know, Case, who is played by Simon Armstrong, who you may recognize, our fans may recognize as Corrin Halfhand from Game of Thrones. It feels very much like the speech that Samuel Jackson gives in Deep Blue Sea, where we're gonna do this, we're gonna survive, and then he's eaten by the shark
in one bite.
Yeah. It's a very similar type
That's
of setup.
That's hilarious. Well, anyway, yep, he gives the big speech and shoof, he gets ready. He's also, by the way, he's got a red sweater on underneath his blue cloak.
Red shirt.
Nice. Anyway, people, here we go. Here we go. Because, Jude, do your worst, Jude, because now we have these people coming up, these bad guys.
What are they called? What are they called? Come on, give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to...
You want me to give you the meat and give it
to
you
raw? Give it to me raw.
They're called Bone Reavers, Jude.
Yeah, they are. Because they reave bones.
So, anyway, Jude applied for a job as a Bone Reaver, but he was shocked when he realized it was a different type of job than he was used to giving.
Oh, my God. You know, you had to go there. All I wanted to do was, you know what? Never mind.
So anyway, the bad guys come a-riding in Skeletor masks.
Which are the best masks?
Apparently they have, they're on horseback and they have a bow and arrow. And they are pretty badass. Anyway.
Wait. Badass? Yeah, they got one lucky shot and they can't hit a... barn wall thereafter.
Like, yeah.
They're absolutely awful shots, in fact.
That's pretty badass and, for a show.
Really?
I think they got two.
No. Their aim is complete garbage. And here
they're
comes
wearing,
my...
But they're wearing bone masks. Ah, it's hard to shoot in that.
Yes. And here
can't
comes...
Can't take those off. They're too cool.
Here comes my theory. So, seeing as this is a George Lucas production, it's a Lucasfilms production.
Yeah.
My theory is that this world, the world of Willow, takes place in the ancient history of the Star Wars universe. And that these are the precursors to what will eventually become the Stormtroopers, their bone masks... echoing that design.
Well, you know, that makes perfect sense. So anyway, so Kit is going to grab Dove.
I feel you don't respect my theory.
Kit is going to take Dove up on her horse to save her as the Fellowship tries to escape.
Because she's heroic.
And, you know, one of the Reavers even recognizes Bormann.
Yeah. And I think this... backstory of his will
thought you were dead
further revealed as the show goes on. He's like wasn't me, shut up.
Yeah. The Fellowship escapes when the horses jump the cliff.
Do they jump the cliff?
Well, we'll talk about that. They land safely in the river. And Bormann, he had been saying, Sugala, Sugala. And they thought it was like some incantation that allowed the horses to safely land. And they're like, what does that mean? And
he's like... Or to cause them to jump.
Right. to cause him to jump or whatever, it enhanced the situation. He's like, well, it's Angorian for stop, which is hilarious. Yeah. Wah, wah.
Borman, definitely my favorite character so far.
Yeah, he's kind of like he's the Han Solo of the situation.
That and the actor is just doing a terrific job with him.
Terrific. So Kit apologizes to Graydon at camp, I guess this is. And who gets it? He gets it. He doesn't want to marry someone he just met out of obligation. But, you know, just think of it like this. When they are in charge, they can do things the way they want to.
Yeah, the conversation kind of felt like he was saying without saying, hey, if we need to get married to save the realm, you know, we can still have our quote-unquote understanding, if you catch my drift.
Or maybe someday when we're in charge of the laws, we can not have to be married or, you know, live the way we want to live. Anyway.
Yeah. There seemed to be more to it, yeah.
So now the Fellowship gets to Willow's village, the Nelwyn village. Nelwyn. But they're stopped outside by one of the Nelwyn. It's Silas.
You
we
sure
don't
it's
know
not
it's
Willow?
Silas. He's pretending to be Willow.
Ah.
He's very obviously not. We know. We know what Willow looks like.
The rest of them don't.
No.
No.
He's like, yes,
not.
I am Willow.
That's it.
But when Kit explains who they are, Willow actually then comes out from the shadows.
Yeah, and once we finally meet Willow for the first time in the show, what does he reveal about little Dove there?
Well,
about our little Dove, who is simply a cook and a serving girl?
Let's get this straight first, though.
Yeah.
Willow, first he explains that Eric has been taken by the Gaels, who work for the Withered Crown.
The Withered Crown.
And they're being taken to Immemorial City, beyond the Shattered Sea.
Honestly, that place is a slum. I don't even know where anyone wanted to go there.
Immemorial City. And they
not
must,
a good tourist
so
attraction.
The so the Fellowship must go into the unknown in order to save Eric. And then Willow sees Dove. And then he sees Dove.
Oh, okay.
And he does a little spell. He grabs her arm and reveals the mark.
Not in an inappropriate way.
Right. And it reveals the mark on her arm. And
again, not in an inappropriate way.
Exhausting. And he says that she's Laura Dannon.
Yes, she is.
Last blood of the Chimeria.
Ah, the Chimeria.
Future Empress.
Future.
And other stuff.
Lots of stuff, yeah.
Lots of things and stuff that this gal is.
Yeah.
And then we get the closing sequence to the alt pop rock Guess Who's Back by The Beginners and their producer, Night Panda, Dustin Atlas. So we got a cool modern rock ending. I like the song choice.
It's an interesting choice.
So, you know, it is a bit of a mixed review, but I really like this show because of the comedy involved. And in the next episode, we're going to find that that's kicked up a bunch, especially by Warwick. The combination of Warwick and Elora is a pretty good... they're doing a good job as a comedy team. He's doing most of the heavy lifting, I think, in that situation. But so as far as this, it seems to me to be a little bit of a standalone in the genre. It's cutting its own little niche in the fantasy genre, and I kind of like it.
Well,
there are certain factual things that seem a bit odd, like the fight scene.
It doesn't make perfect sense, but you know, once again, as we both agree on, it's a prequel to Star Wars, so you know, it is what it is, so it's cool.
I have to say that I'm enjoying the effects and the overall aesthetic of the show a lot more than the 1988 film. That's for damn sure.
It's amazing what 35 years will do.
You know, it's not weird. Not much has changed technologically.
It's kind of crazy.
But yeah, the show looks cool. I love the villains, those gals.
Those gals.
And I feel like they've, a lot of, again, there seems to be some negative feedback on the YouTubes.
We're not even going to get into that.
I don't want to get into it, but I just want to say I don't feel that way about it. I'm enjoying the humor of the show, and I guess the fact that the show doesn't take itself as seriously in a lot of ways kind of helps in this genre, unless you're going to do a Game of Thrones.
Well, I think that it really comes down to, with this show in particular, if you liked the original movie and that material, I think that this is a pretty good continuation of that and of the feeling and of the themes that we got from that. Whereas, we don't want a George R. R. Martin. We don't want a super serious downer of a world in this. We want it to be similar. And I think it's so far from what we've gotten, it feels like a natural extension of the original, but done in a modern era with modern sensibilities, better special effects, and probably a bigger budget than the entire movie had. And, we'll see where it goes. But so far, I too am enjoying it.
Okay, so with that, we're going to wrap things up now. And we're going to be back with our review and analysis and scene by scene of episode 2 later on today. So I'm your host, Rob Law. And this has been the JRR You Tolkien to Me podcast about Willow, episode 1, The Gales. And I'm out of here. Jude, you got something to take us out with?
And I'm Jude Fox. And if you'd like to contact us, you can email us at youtalkintome@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at youtalkintome about the fellowship. And I just want to remind everyone to like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating wherever you find your podcasts, and share with your friends to help grow the fellowship. For now, bye-bye.